Call to order the Board of Education special meeting of Finance Committee of the Whole on October 24th, 2011, starting at 6:05 p.m. at the Central Services Offices. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood? Mr. Bondurant? Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mrs. Howard? Mr. Black?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Any public participation? Seeing none, we'll get into our discussion items.
Okay, well, I want to express my appreciation for board members coming this evening to an earlier meeting of the whole. I know it's difficult to get away from other obligations. We have three items in this meeting of the whole, but the main focus of our meeting this evening will be to present to you a multi-year budget forecast that is general in many, many respects, but we think it's the context setting that you have asked us for in the past as it relates to preparing for the levy decision. And since we approve our budget well after the levy has been approved, we have been working over the last couple of years to give you a little bit more context into our budgeting priorities. So we really have two approaches to this evening. I'm going to share just an overview of our educational priorities as they link to the long-range plan, and then Bob's going to walk through the numbers with you as they relate to the costs of those ideas that we have placed in the plan.
Thank you.
So, 21st Century Learning is really the overview, the set, the foundation that we're working toward in the next 5 years with our plan. And along with that, as you know, are significant changes in the reform legislation that will require us to do many things differently, not the least of which is teacher evaluation and the use of performance data for that. So there are a lot of major changes that are going to occur over the next 5 years that will be driving our budget priorities. And we've listed those for you in the kind of the overview to the budget information. And I'm going to talk about each one of them, though they're really interrelated to one another. So if it appears to them being a little random, it's only because there's such strong connections between all of the pieces that we're really talking about. So if we talk just from the very beginning of the Common Core and implementing the Common Core, that brings with it lots of changes that will relate to assessment practices. And while we don't know exactly what those assessment practices will look like in terms of state testing, we do know that there are some things that we feel are very important to begin assessing. In addition to our growth data, we really want to begin to start tracking individual student goal setting and how they are managing their own learning career, so to speak, and building efficacy for that. So that will be a priority over the next several years, and there are some costs associated with that. Because we will have to include student performance in the evaluation of teachers, we are looking at systems right now that will help us manage the data, be compliant with the law, but also give us multiple measures by which to judge teachers and not just a single measure. So that's another huge area of the assessment picture. Clearly, the Common Core will have an impact on our curriculum and some changes that we will have to make. Now, while we might say in the core areas we'll be making adjustments as opposed to whole-scale shifting, however, as we begin to think about what a 21st century classroom environment learning experience looks like, we do see massive changes on the horizon. Mm-hmm. And so there are a couple of things we're doing right now that we expect to continue to build upon over the next several years. Karen has already brought together a group of people to start thinking outside the box, think tank we've called it, for really thinking about what might the learning environment look like, what might education look like, where we are doing things differently instead of four groups of same grade classrooms, what are ways in which we can really meet the demands of the 21st century expectations for flexibility, agility, easy to move, change, meet the needs of kids individually, and address the strong need for STEM, math, and strong need to meet the needs of multiple literacies. So all of that, you know, is kind of swirling around in their thinking, and they'll be looking at lots and lots of different ways in which they might structure the learning environment. We think there are probably some costs associated with that, but they're not costs that we haven't already begun discussing as we've talked about our facilities and how our facilities might need to change. So as you couple that with the 21st century learning model classrooms that we're trying to establish, these next several years are really looking at what will the paradigm look like for a new educational model to meet 21st century demands. So we see that there are some expenses associated with that, that if we choose not to be status quo, which we don't recommend, then we're going to have to make some shifts in how we structure our schools, and that will incur some costs for us. Professional development is going to be a huge priority over the next several years because of all of these changes. Not only the changes that we foresee in the curriculum and the delivery of instruction, the way the classroom is set up, but also huge changes in the way teachers are evaluated. And so preparing them to understand both how to work in this growth model, but also to excel in the growth model, will place significant demands on our professional development work. I've lightly mentioned the classroom environment, and as you'll see as we begin to build the short-term facilities plan, that even without a major renovation or major construction work, we will begin to look at, over the course of the next many years, what kinds of lighting is described as being best for learning environments, what kinds of fixtures, what kinds of coverings can help us become more sustainable and lower our energy costs over time. So the learning environment will be certainly an integral part of making changes to the learning experience. Technology access, as you know, has been a strong driver for us in this renewal of the long-range plan with a goal of creating a one-to-one access for students in some capacity. That doesn't mean a laptop solution, that doesn't mean a netbook or a tablet solution necessarily, but it means that we have adequate technology in our schools so that students can have access to some kind of technology, some kind of handheld, some kind of device that would allow them to explore beyond the four walls of their classroom. So this is a major priority of expenditure over the next several years. And I think you've heard Mike say that we're going to be living in two worlds in a way as we make a shift to more cloud computing. We're still spending a lot of money on our current infrastructure in order to keep it moving with servers and that sort of thing. And so as we begin to shift, we'll be in kind of dual places. One, making the shifts to build our infrastructure to be more robust to handle the cloud computing and allow people, you know, pretty quick access in a wireless environment, while we're still then transitioning out some of our old servers and that sort of thing. So that's a very, very quick overview of where we see priorities taking place. And you'll see some dollars, and you've probably already had a chance to look through those, where we place dollars, estimates, of course, at this point, that we think will lead the work that we need to do. Another thing that I didn't mention, but you know is part of the work we've been doing in the long-range plan, is foreign language. And right now we have a group that's looking at foreign language as something that we may want to add into our core curriculum over the course of the next 5 years, and what expenses might be associated with that. Now, very preliminarily, we don't even have a model at this point that we would be suggesting to you. And Karen is leading a committee that will begin site visits next month to start looking at some other school districts where they offer foreign language and look at the models that they have. But so that's a whole nother layer of creating this 21st century learning, creating a global environment in which students have greater access to future language competencies. So that's kind of the overview of priorities. First, before we dig into the numbers, do you have any questions about those priorities? It's really restating the long-range plan for you.
Yeah, no, it's good. Good context setting.
Okay, so Bob, you do the numbers, if you can read them. Lori and Mike, who are at the Skyward Conference in Peoria. But in case there were questions specifically.
Right. So, we wanted to create a document that's similar, not much unlike what you typically have seen every spring. So, mm-hmm. we tried to follow the same format, and I'll mull through these items here and then try to answer any questions that you may have. As Ann has stated, we came up with four sort of primary sections for this presentation. We have your educational priorities. We have a multi-year budget, which takes you through the current budget and then out for the budget that we'll be levying for a little later in the year here. And then we've taken it out a couple of additional years just to show you what our educational priorities, capital projects, and so forth will be over that period of time. We've also provided you with up-to-date functional summaries, which you've seen annually, and also a current staffing, staffing summary. Please keep in mind that the enrollment numbers are kept relatively constant. The staffing summaries remain pretty much as they are right now, about 259 full FTEs, full-time equivalents. So what have we done here? As you can see up here in the top line, I've indicated the CPI that's been used or the assumptions that were used in each one of the presentations here. This current budget that we were in, we had a 2.7 CPI, which was essentially 2 years ago. Last December, we had a CPI of 1.5%. And then I've taken out, done the individual levy calculations, estimating CPI at 2.5%. Now, I will caution you that CPI for this year is running above 2.5%. It's slightly in excess of 3% right now. So these projections were done a couple of weeks ago. I did not go back and update the CPI or other things, other factors that I may have had a conversation with the local township assessor. So I just wanted to let you know that. On average, the salaries have been increased 4% per year on an annual basis. Benefits, we have roughly in our benefit line a 75-25% ratio, and that is 75% of our benefits are for health and dental plans, as well as the other benefits associated with our staff. So we took benefits up, the medical benefits up by 6%, and then the remaining benefits were driven up just by a function of their increase in the salaries. Purchase services, you've noticed purchase services and supplies and material, we've frozen over the next several years. I don't know that that's a realistic expectation, given that we have pretty much held purchase services and supplies and materials at its current level now for the past couple of years. So I just wanted to show you what the assumptions would look like if they were frozen. Again, however, I don't know if that's a real accurate portrayal. What I did is, this is this year's capital expenditures, approximately $1.6 million. When I get a little bit down below here and we start talking about the educational priorities, in particular, what I did is I tied the capital expenditure line, the capital outlay line, into the infrastructure in terms of updates that we would need. Now, these are obviously very large numbers, much greater than what we've typically experienced over the past several years. But Ann wanted me to demonstrate to you that these are projects that are on our sort of our timeline. We brought the capital projects presentation to the board. And we try to do that annually. And these are just, before we even start to prioritize, these are the types of obligations we could be looking forward to over the next several years. In particular, this would continue the rollout of the 21st Century Classroom, which we've committed to spending a couple hundred thousand dollars a year. It does incorporate the use of the aging obsolescence plan and how we prioritize our expenditures from year to year. And in infrastructure needs, as you know, we've talked about a recommendation where we were going to redo the parking lot of Hadley. There is still the back lot of Hadley that needs to be done, as well as the lot of Churchill. After these parking lot projects are done over the next couple of years, we're in pretty good shape for probably a 10-year period. Mm-hmm. Next item out there is roofs. Most of our roofs are now in the 15 to 20-year range. Some roofs were originally done during the referendum. It was work around 1997 or 98. Not all of those were done, so we have several that are in a 15 to 20 year range. These were constructed as 20 year roofs, so we can expect to start to see some issues coming on board with that in that respect. So let's talk a little bit, as you can see the type of expenditures and what relationship that has to the bottom line in terms of deficits that could be seen over the next several years. If we were ever to prioritize and say, okay, we want to commit ourselves to doing multiple million dollars worth of projects in a particular year.
The only addition to these budgeted items, though, are the capital projects.
That's correct.
The items that you'll see below are not factored into these budgets at all in any specific way.
So what do some of those numbers start to look like? And I will speak specifically about capital projects. We have Karen, Mike, and Lori are on the phone, so if there's specific questions regarding their area of specialization, we should address those folks at that time, okay?
And if I could just say, just so everybody knows, Mike and Lori and several members of our Human Resources and Finance Facilities and Operations are at a conference in Peoria for the Skyward software training and updates. And so they were kind enough to finish their work day at the conference and join us on phone tonight, just in case there are any specific questions that you may have about these projected expenditures. So thanks, Bob, or thanks, Mike and Lori, for joining us.
Sure.
No problem.
Just wanted to make sure they're still there.
So we sat down as a cabinet and we developed our vision of the educational priorities in the 21st century learning environment over the next several years. And what we've done is they have based standards and assessment, curriculum and instruction, our parent areas of specialization. We have Lori doing professional development. The learning environments is my area that I oversee. We have the classroom environments. Typically, we spend $500,000 a year or more in terms of the age and obsolescence plan. Those are just normal items that we're looking to replace. It doesn't include boilers or air conditioners or anything like that. This is just typically classroom or small building type of equipment. We have the continued rollout of the 21st century classroom at approximately $200,000 a year. I went through and tried to prioritize or did prioritize capital outlay, which would be the parking lots and roofs, and what those numbers would look like over the coming years. For total commitments, as you can see here, 4.4, 4.3, very large amount in 2014 and 15, and then a smaller amount. Now, I will tell you, once we get past this 15-16 here, because we had that capital projects plan taken out to past the year 2020, a lot of our work will have been done, and we would think that expenditures like that would go down considerably once we get out about 3 or 4 or 5 years. Next, we have Mike's area, technology, and then finally, Julie's area of ambassadorship. So I have just briefly touched on what the capital needs would be over the next several years. Are there any questions on that?
What is the, in the 2015-2016, under technology access, it says increased operational efficiency, and you see it go from around $20,000 on average up to $255,000. What is that?
Mike, did you hear that question?
Yes, I did. And which years again was that, Dan?
2015-2016.
It's the last budget year.
Right, and I think I went out 2 years, but I think for that, I was looking at possibly virtualizing some of our servers or our existing server farm, consolidating those down to only a few servers rather than the 30-some-odd that we currently have. So we would replace those with a couple of servers and then the overlay of the virtualization software on top of it for our servers. So that's one of the things we're anticipating doing within the next 2 to 3 years.
So That's that transition where you're living in two worlds a little bit for a year while you make that shift from the infrastructure that you've been supporting to a new infrastructure.
But then again, at that time, we're also going to be looking at refreshing the computers at Hadley as well. So that's where that dollar amount's going to come from with the equipment that we'll have to replace at Hadley, even though you know that's only a few years away.
Okay, I just saw a large jump.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's in the lab, Mike.
Yeah. Well, that'll be throughout the whole building at Hadley. But then again, those will be leases also coming off.
Right.
At that point. So that will free up some dollars for us to be able to replace that equipment.
Shouldn't we have a constant, I mean, right now we lease on a yearly basis anyway, so there's kind of a constant budgeted technology portion.
Correct.
Jump. I can see replacing servers, but then again, are we looking
well,
at
I didn't take into account rolling off the leases that we're currently paying on. So that does also include not just the equipment at Hadley, but also all of the switching equipment that we purchased several years ago. So that would be money coming off.
Okay. And I guess we would caution board members in looking out beyond the 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're trying to create a picture for you of a longer view of where we're headed and some of the costs that may be associated with where we're headed. But the request from the board a couple of years ago was, if you're going, you know, before we approve the levy, can you give us a picture of what your budgets will look like? And that's this. So as we started looking, though, at this particular long-range plan, it made sense to just, okay, here's where we're looking out as far as we possibly can in terms of priorities and guesses as to what it may cost to live with those priorities.
But my question is, for a lot of technology, we're looking at it as a yearly lease,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever it is.
Right, so it should
and
be just a
every
flow.
Every 4 or 5 years, we can get the new lease and kind of have nearly the same payment
mm-hmm.
or less
mm-hmm.
as technology gets cheaper and smaller. Whereas unlike a capital expenditure, like a new parking lot or something, that's now we're paying, you know, a big multi-million dollar 1 year. We're not spreading that out over
mm-hmm.
20 years.
Right.
That's right. I'm not, you know, in terms of technology,
that's
why we're seeing a big jump.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just to clarify,
the previous years, the leases, to
mm-hmm.
show that that's really the same thing.
So, Mike, do you want to
continue? Can I answer that?
Yes, continue on with that.
Well, when Bob asked me to pull these numbers together, that's just sort of an aggregate number of the equipment that we would purchase. It doesn't break down our annual leasing commitment. So that $250,000 would be a lump payment that would not be all paid out in 1 year.
Okay.
That would be something that would be leased over a 3 to 5 year period. I didn't break it out as fine as to figure out, well, what are our financing terms going to be for this equipment? I just kind of threw a lump sum in saying, well, that's, we're going to anticipate that kind of a purchase, but without breaking it out into what the annual lease payments would be. And right now we're on a 3 to 5 year cycle.
Okay.
Depending on what the equipment is and how long we anticipate it to be here.
But we also anticipate that there will be some increased costs for a short period of time as we shift kind of how we're doing business. Is that correct, Mike?
Sure, there'll be a little bit of a spike, but over time we're also looking at ways to scale back
mm-hmm.
some of the equipment that we have and take advantage of some
right.
other services that might allow us to carry less equipment, particularly on the back end, on the infrastructure side.
So the goal would be to be less expensive
right.
over time.
Yeah.
Right, over time.
Thanks, Mike.
Or get more
technology.
More for the same dollar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bob, if I drill down a little bit on the sustainable infrastructure maintenance, This is roughly $16 million spread out over the 4 year period. Is that anticipated? Are you anticipating in that number you're going to pay off, or you're going to re-roof all the buildings,
What we do is we annually survey our buildings and we prioritize and reprioritize each year. Our roofs are divided into sections so that we can get some cost savings so we don't have to go in, let's say, do an entire roof at Lincoln or an entire roof at Hadley. That's the way they were designed. We would go in and annually review them, see if we can get a little extra time out of them, see if we need to reprioritize and bring it closer to more of a present date. I would say that this would be balanced out over a number of years, and again, this is a large number to look at one time, and I, to be honest with you, I don't really anticipate having to do $4 million worth of work in one particular year, but that's kind of what's on the docket. I mean, if you look at the capital projects plan over the next couple of years, we have substantial commitment to parking lots, roofs. I mean, this is, these numbers have been given to us by our, the professional engineers that we employ, and just looking out based historically, you know, these things are like the lot of it. It's over 20 years old, some of the roofs. Some of them even predate the referendum back in 97 or 98. So we annually look at these things as they appear to be necessary. We'll continue to address them. But this is just an itemization of exactly what may be on the horizon, given what we know today.
And if you did all of this, which I think is what your question was, then we would have done it all, too. Mm-hmm. We'd have all the roofs completed. All the paving would be updated. So we would be in tip-top shape with roofs and parking lots.
No. My understanding is, based on our conversation, once the Hadley parking lot is done, the only parking lot left to be done is Churchill.
Well, the back part of Hadley needs work that has not been addressed, and then Churchill. As you know, Franklin's brand new. We don't have a lot of paving over here at Forest Glen or Lincoln. Maybe your two biggest lots are Franklin, Churchill, and Hadley.
Okay.
And Hadley's, or excuse me, but Franklin is virtually new. Churchill is going to need some work, and then the two lots in Franklin and Hadley.
Okay. And I guess I'm just trying to back into kind of a back of envelope kind of number.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where I look at $16 million and I try and break it apart and say,
it's a significant contribution, and I understand and appreciate that. Like I said, I'm not saying this is all going to happen in 3 or 4 years. I'm just saying that given the information that we currently have available, it might be necessary to look at several of these projects in a shorter time frame versus spread over 5 or 7 or 10 years.
Well, I appreciate the reality check. I think I'd rather know that there's the potential for these things to go, or sections of a roof or whatever, than to be surprised by it. So, I mean, that was the request from Finance Committee to you, Bob, in terms of rolling out a longer-term projection.
And I do think that if, you know, go back to master facilities, that if you look at a master facility as a construction plan in the next 5 to 6 years, that you would probably include some of these projects in that request, because it would be renovations to a building as well. But we, you know, I think we've taken our direction in the past from the board to say, look, we want to know what's on the horizon. What is it what should we be looking at? What would we be thinking about? What are the things that are going to cause us to use our money? And what is our expenditure plan in general?
Well, and for me, for capital, it's what keeps you up at night. You know, what are we thinking about that we need to prepare for and not be, you know, not be behind as the district was many years ago, where we've now caught up and we've really stayed on top of it. And we're really not just managing, but sustaining good practice. So.
Well, that's what I was asked to do a number of years ago when I first arrived, and that was put together a long-term capital project
right.
plan. And that's essentially what we have here now. Mm-hmm. Again, we look at these things annually. We see where we stand, mm-hmm. and we make decisions and recommendations based upon the information that we have.
Bob, is it all roofs and parking lots, or is it other things as
well? Well, over the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, we've redone all the boilers. Our chillers are in good shape. Air conditioning, you know, there's like we have a lot of window units over at Hadley. Those are just normal replacement types of items. But yeah, when you're talking major projects, I would say your roofs, your parking lots, tuck pointing, things of that nature that will take major dollars we need to allocate to keep our facilities up to date. Those are probably the three big things right now. If you remember over this past summer when we came last spring, we gave a recommendation to the board. We had to do some so tough pointing over Franklin, because essentially like the top 5 feet of that northeast corner of the building, it actually moved about 2 inches. So that all had to be cut out, replaced, and put back together. And those are just the types of things that we're looking at. And I try to guard on the side of caution, but I also try to provide a good, clean eye in terms of what the expectations may be. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know where things may eventually roll out. This is our best guess, given the information that we have available. We've got a director of buildings and grounds been in the business for 20-some years. And the weather that we've had over the past 3 or 4 years, between a lot of the extreme cold and snow and things of that nature, it's taken its toll on our parking lots, taking a toll on our roofs. So we try to maintain these things every year. Like, I'll tell you that we probably do $30,000 worth of roof leak, just normal maintenance every year. This past summer, we spent money on patching and seal coating most all of our locks. Those are types of things you need to do every 3 to 5 years, and we do that with the hopes that we'll gain as much additional life out of that asset as we can. So if there's normal maintenance involved, if we can do something that will put off $1 million or $2 million project for a couple of years, that's the action that we take.
Well, I have two things in terms of the parking lots and the roofs. Is there a more detailed budget line item in when you did this that broke down roofs, parking lots, and tuck pointing?
Last spring, when I presented the capital projects to the board, it showed going out beyond 2020. It had roofs, lots. It had our age and obsolescence plan. It had it all laid out for 10, 15 years
in front of us. It ties back to that point.
Those numbers that you see in this
ties,
here,
tie back to, okay.
Those numbers that you see here tie back to the capital project.
Okay. And I guess my other question, and we've chatted about this in the past, if we go year over year that we don't do a roof, does it make sense to put some sort of reserve in place?
It makes sense. As a matter of fact, the professional organization that I belong to, that previously was not the way we sort of did things, okay? But they're saying, if you want to specifically identify, hey, I want to set aside $1 million for this project in the year 2014, you can identify and set aside reserves specifically for their project. However, they caution us, don't think 2 years down the road you can kind of go back and change that. If you've identified it for a particular project, you're locked into that project.
And if I could set a context for that just a little bit with two things. One, we did give you, at Finance Committee's request, just a draft of a fiscal philosophy so that Finance Committee can begin to talk about it in policy. Committee can talk about it when they meet tomorrow, but that's a context around which those kinds of things might be discussed. The other thing I just would like to draw your attention to is, in the midst of all these tremendous capital projects demands, if you look at the cost of the next 5 years of curriculum implementation and changes, we're also starting to talk about some highly competing interests and demands. So just to give you just an overview of that, if we begin to really look at 21st century learning, which would require us to treat our media centers, our LLCs, as media centers instead of the old-fashioned kind of libraries that we currently have, there are significant expenses that go with that. We're talking about creating a problem-based learning experience for students that would meet their needs and be organized a little differently than our grade-level organization is currently. That's going to cost you some money. Perhaps the next biggest item that is significant for us is the importance of STEM and science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, which is a strong focus both in the Common Core, and it's of course a federal focus for us. We're not properly set up in any of our schools to have a STEM curriculum. And so as we talk about roofs, and you know I love roofs, and I think all of that's really important, and I do, and I feel very strongly that unless you can keep your house in order, you know, you're going to have more problems down the road. But where we've been able to keep our curriculum moving forward and keep our expenditures relatively modest in that respect, if we are talking and if the board supports a vision of this district that is able to meet the demands of a global society, then we have significant curricular changes, which are going to require structural changes, which are going to require large investments in technology and in laboratory settings. So I put that out there for you, because while those figures, the $1,875,000 and $1,825,000 and $345,000, are not included in our overview expenditure plan, Those are numbers that as we begin to do our budget preparation, we're going to be grappling with, as will you, as you help us define what the vision is for this district over the next several years. So there are ample challenges ahead for us in terms of the resources available and the expectation that we would have a balanced budget. Obviously, we're not going to bring to you a budget that goes $7 million in deficit. But that's the balancing act that we'll certainly all be experiencing over the next several years.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I had that marked, you know, as just some notes that I took on some of the other pages. But I'm going to be honest to say, I don't think that's enough to be budgeted for the educational program.
It may not be.
And that concerns me. We sit here and, you know, we want to crunch the numbers, and it makes me nervous that we're focused on our buildings so much that what's going on within those buildings, in my opinion, is much more important. We can duct tape if we have to duct tape, but we can't do that. I feel like we talk, I feel like we talk out of both sides of our mouths when we discuss this topic, because we focus so much on the financial picture of the little things, and the big thing is that we are in the business of educating children. So while we have an upcoming teacher's contract, which is a big part of that, there are major curriculum changes that this board has said we demand to see. And that has a dollar sign to it, and we are not talking about that dollar.
Well, we're trying.
I just care, and it's not enough money to get them.
And it may not be, but I would also note for you that some of the other costs that would go into that are found in the classroom environment A&O plan and in mm-hmm. the furniture fixtures. Some of that is, you know, actually creating the labs and creating, pardon?
And technology.
I mean, so there are other costs built into that.
And I know, you know, with that LLP, you know, the foreign language grant, and, you know, laying the groundwork to begin down that path, which this board has consistently said is a large interest for us. But, I just want to caution the board, if we're going to look at our administrators or Anne to tell her people that these are our priorities, we have to be willing to set aside and say we're willing to spend the money to make this happen. And we have the money to do it if we budget properly, and, you know, that's how we need to levy. We need to think about that to be able to have that money available to our staff.
I think we're getting to a bigger conversation, but I guess I don't understand what you mean by budget. When I see a proposal that shows a deficit, I think that, you know, that's one thing we've talked about in the past, is we need to have that conversation about what is our working cash ratio, and, you know, what is our policy towards deficits.
Right. I would say at face value, Dan, on this, we would not bring you a budget with deficit spending at this point in time. Because, one, we don't have that larger plan to say, well, okay, we have to create labs, or we have to do roofs, or we have to do something, so we'll use reserves for that. What we try to create here for you is a picture of work we do annually, and that is to say,
okay, what are all the things that will go into our thinking about next year, and what will they cost approximately? And then from there, we start to pare it down and, you know, start to realize there's a budget within which we must live. So what we'd like to see happen in 5 years, and maybe it will take seven or something like that. But we wanted to create for you a little more detail than we've done in the past around those educational priorities and what they could cost us over the next 7 years.
I guess I'm expecting that before we get to the levy discussion, there will be okay, here's what we'd like to do. Here's, based on our expected levy, here's what we're going to do.
Well, then you're asking us to have a fully prepared budget before we levy, which I think we've said to the board is very difficult for us to do. We've tried to capture for you where our priorities will be next year in this outline. From there, I mean, foreign language may not be $700,000 in the next year because we aren't ready for implementation of a foreign language program in this district.
Well, I'm not saying full of detail, but to this level of detail that we've already seen, we see a deficit spent. If we're not going to deficit spend, then this same level of detail showing what we would anticipate will be spent, I think would be helpful.
Okay, so that's a little bit of a change from what the board has said in the past, which has been show us where your expenditures would be. So be as conservative as you think you need to be, so that we can at least understand why you're requesting what you're requesting. Not that we would have such kind of finite detail around what it is we would be spending. Because either way, if we were to ask for, you know, $200,000 more than we think we might get in a levy, are you asking that we would detail what that $200,000 would be spent for?
No, I just think it's fair. There's going to be trade-offs. And if someone says, hey, bad economy, maximizing the levy, what are you going to spend on? Right now, I don't know. I just see, here's what we'd like to spend it on. Versus if I can say, well, you know, we got to do these groups right now. We got this other curriculum we're going to push on. Or we want to do the curriculum right now. We're going to patch and see what we can do to push the groups out. That's just what I'm looking for, and I think it would be fair before a levy to say, here's what we need, and here's what we're spending. I mean, I don't know if anyone agrees or disagrees, but I just find that a little confusing.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I think, to Ann's point, my recollection of the conversation last year and then at Finance was wanting to have a sense of, as you project out, knowing what you know today, what are the things that are going to be, that we're going to need to drive the kind of curriculum, et cetera. And so I guess the way I hear what you're saying, because when I look at these numbers in the columns and the dates attached to them, it does give me pause to say, do we have enough? And you've never presented a budget to us that deficit spends.
No, we haven't.
And so my expectation is you, A, wouldn't do that. And so you would frame, to your point, Dan, the expenses that are relevant to what we need to get done. What I think is important for me with this kind of outlay, or forward view rather, is that it sets context with a couple other pieces that we've been talking a lot about, and that is starting back in 07 and 08 with the Vision Committee, setting tone for 21st century learning and curriculum. And so what this does is start to lay out for the community attaching items and dollars that speak to what that particular group of community members who participated in the vision want us to be thinking about. So my expectation is that the budget will get back, that we ultimately have to plan levy around, is not going to be a deficit spending budget. But it will include some forward thinking about the reality check we need to make as a board to be planning. So it's this balance. And I completely get, Dan, the whole idea of needing concrete numbers. And that's why the way this whole budget process works makes us crazy.
Well, it's very difficult for us to give you concrete numbers for revenues we don't have.
Right. Yeah.
And
with staffing,
those decisions would be extremely premature on our part at this point. One, we don't know what our staffing will look like for next year. We haven't brought to you class size targets. We haven't made a decision on so many aspects of next year's expenditure plan.
Mm-hmm.
So
in a nutshell, really what this is for us, this budget and this outlay, which I like. I like that actually it goes out this far and that you've delineated for our reality check, these are the things that we need to consider in order to really drive a curriculum that takes us to that next level, which is what I hear our community asking us. They want rigor, they want technology, they want, I'm a part of the community, we want those things.
Well,
so it's important to...
And that may be part of the board's conversation.
Right.
You know, Dan has asked the question about, you know, this fiscal philosophy and directing us and being able to say we want, you know, what do we want for fiscal philosophy?
Mm-hmm.
Are we clear administratively what the board's direction for us is in terms of the long-range plan implementation and the willingness to expend dollars mm-hmm. for that implementation? So I think in alignment with that other conversation, perhaps, is the board's vision.
Mm-hmm.
Does the board believe what Erica just said? That the community wants to see us become a 21st century school district. So I think that's probably part of that conversation as well.
Bob, if you don't mind, the previous slide was a smaller outlay.
Just the budget?
Just the budget itself.
Sure.
I don't know if it's your purview or not, but underneath the capital outlay, the other line item, what is that?
Bond payments, private tuition. Tuition that we paid on for our kids. That was taken up. Well, the bond payments are what they are. They're going to escalate anywhere between $2.6 and $3 million until they're ultimately paid off in 17 and 18, fiscal year 17 and 18. And then the other largest area underneath there, which is about $1 million a year, are tuition payments. That I grew by about 4.5%. So that majority of that is a given. We don't have any, I don't have any say so in terms of what goes in that particular line item.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to say, you know, for me, just to get a high level feel, you know, given that you put in specific large expenditures or given these priorities, I can't, you know, what you're saying in terms of new curriculum and that. Are you saying, you know, given the type of spending you've done, we're going to need to increase it 1% a year for the next 10 years to do these things, or, you know, that type of high-level view of this, that's where I don't understand what you're saying in terms of the priorities we've got to spend these things, that you're looking to say things are going to, you know...
Escalate in terms of...
Yeah, you know, for people, mm-hmm. it's, you know, from what we've traditionally spent on curriculum, or is technology going to replace things that... It should be on par with it. It's just going to be a different type of expense. And here you talked about possibly a layaway plan or something that you allocate certain money to a fund to do things.
You could do that.
For me, it'd be a lot easier for those large expenditures if you also kind of showed for the next 15 years you're only taking out, you know, you spent $4 million this year, but actually it's spread out. Essentially like you borrow from your 401k. You know, where you say, okay, we're taking $4 million out of our reserves, but we owe ourselves 1/15th of that every year. And then you don't have these huge chunks of expenditures, but you kind of see how it averages out over, you know, many years.
Well, absolutely. That, you know, you may look at that as Drew indicated earlier, $16 million worth of parking lots and roofs, but that's a number that pretty much keeps you going for the next 15 or 20.
Right, and that's what's not shown here, where I need to understand, okay, we always have had balanced budgets. Given your priorities, are you saying we're going to slightly start spending more than we're taking in, given the same amount of CPI, salary expenses in line with the traditional CPI increases we've had or other things? If something's changing between the revenue and expenditure balance that's going to need to come back in line, that's what I can't take out of. You know, even looking 5 years out, putting large expenditures in like that, unless you amortize them out, that we don't have expenses later on. or you've done it the way other districts do, like District 89, where they just sold $20 million worth of bonds and did all their roofs at once and everything, and then it's really just added into your other category as a bond payment every year.
No, that's, you're true about, but that's accurate about District 89. Right. I was just talking to District 87 today, and they're telling me they're going to make a commitment of about $4 million.
Right, and they sold performance bonds, too, where they've come in and said, you know, we're going to redo all our lighting, and it's going to pay for itself over the next 15 years or something like that. But they sold the bonds up front, and it's really just a, it's an expenditure that's shown every year as a bond payment that's spread out over a number of years. Mm-hmm. The problem with these expenditures and these large deficits is we're not doing that. We're basically saying we've got reserves, why don't we just spend the money we have in reserves instead of going out and borrowing more? But we don't really show that it's an expense that's going to be spread out over time. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that was not our purpose.
Okay.
In giving you that kind of detail, we're not really giving you a plan for addressing roofs in this presentation tonight. How would we do that? I mean, what you're suggesting is the development of a plan specifically for that kind of large expenditure, which we didn't intend. I mean, that was not our intention in creating this tonight. It was really just to create a sense of the picture for, do we need to levy, and what do we need to levy? Mm-hmm. And so your suggestions, I think, are helpful to us in terms of a larger conversation. And I think what I'm hearing from you is that at least in 2013, FY13 year, which is probably all we could do, would be to become more finite in what it is we want to budget. I mean, but I think your conversation about what are we going to do, this paints the picture of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the next question. It's not a question we can have and resolve a month before the levy. It's kind of a question that you would be talking about as we talk about implementing the long-range plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bigger conversation.
When do you get the new construction estimates? Or is that, are the percentages on your revenues, CPI and new construction?
Well, I spoke to the township assessor, and he is not painting a very rosy picture. I'll give you an idea. Last year, new construction came in at $13.3 million.
Right.
They told me they thought it was only going to come in about $10 million.
Right.
When it came in substantially higher. I had a conversation with the assessor from Milton Township last week, and his overall township belief is a decline of about 5.8% EAB this year. So I asked him specifically about District 41. He said that information will not be available for probably close to another month. So I don't have those numbers. It's just everybody's just talking in terms of theoretically what could happen now. The only thing we know is CPI is 1.5%.
Right.
So new construction and EAV are both the wildcat, the unknowns out there.
But to your point, Anne, what the point of this then you're saying is we need to levy.
We're trying to create a picture of what our needs will be if we're going to move forward. Now, clearly, we can pare that down and try to get more finite, more specific about next year's budget and the priorities for it. But in the context of change, yes, we could say to you next year, possibly, but we don't have a plan to do that at this point. But it's possible, depending on how far along we went with some of the work that we're doing this year in curriculum instruction, we could say, next year we need to do this. We'd like to be able to implement this. We'd like to ask you to give us a one-time expenditure to build a lab. Or we definitely have to hit our roofs. We've seen some significant damage at one of our roofs. Maybe the winter is bad. We feel we need to go into our reserves. At this point, we really can't say that. We're not far enough along in our current year to be able to make that kind of recommendation at this point.
Mm-hmm. The takeaway, I think, for the board, and it ties certainly back to what Dan said and also what Tara and Steve have said. And it's that we have to get our arms at the board around this kind of, this reality that as Common Core comes on and things begin to shift and we start to look at the very real kind of timing of capital projects, that we have to take these things into account. And the other thing I think for the board, and this will get into our conversation really around fiscal philosophy too, is if we are going to, you know, remind ourselves of the context of the beginning of this 21st century learning conversation back to 07-08, that we have you know, groups of community members who have weighed in on that and in certain ways I think are watching the changes that are happening and also expecting us to deliver on some of those changes. So I think our reflection is to take a look at the, you know, these pieces and how we see them as parts of a multi-year plan to roll out the long-range plan and certainly the vision for the district. And those always will have resources attached. And to Tara's point, we're not used to looking at a $1.8 million expenditure for, you know, in over time in terms of curriculum on those pieces. So it's a really important piece for us to be thinking about as we move forward so we can support this journey that we're on, because we're on that journey.
Or not.
Well,
I mean, I think that's the other question. You know, that we've listed some things there in the learning experience that could cost the district significant dollars. If the board says to us, we can't go forward on these plans, you know, then we would certainly want to know that,
mm-hmm.
So that we, you know, we don't continue that work. But knowing that there is a cost associated with making some of the changes that we're suggesting are in the best interest of students and learning over the course of the next 5 years.
Right, that's what you're presenting to us. Yeah.
So do you mean some of these plans that are set out in these specific...
Your functional analysis.
Right.
Your functional analysis is just a report that we give you every year for your information. It helps. We use it to look at the cost of programs, and it helps us with program evaluation or looking at reallocating of resources. So as we're looking at a new paradigm, perhaps, in our learning environment, where might some of those expenses be found, or some of those revenues be found in existing programs? So it is reshifting. It's not saying we're going to need $1.8 million extra next year, but the cost of making some changes might cost $1 million, which might mean other programs then take on less significance over the next couple of years as well.
Mm-hmm. So that moves along to the conversation I was just going to bring up, and that is that annually we provide the board, finance committee and the board, with this functional analysis. And what this is sort of a 10,000-foot look at round dollars. What does it take to run our pre-K program? What does it take to run our bilingual program, our special ed program? What does it take to run all those different programs? Now, taking a sum of all these expenditures, these will not add up to your expenditure line in sort of the summary budget, but this is a good idea of the dollars that we allocate to run specific programs on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken that out a couple of years just to give you some idea in terms of the long-range commitment to those programs.
Mm-hmm. This always is helpful for me as I go through these, because you roll forward into, you know, the next budget cycle for particular programs, and we can see how there's a shift. We talk about special education and bilingual education. We know our district is changing demographically, and we know that's going to be reflected in future budgets. So these pieces are very helpful to me. It also shows how tight we staff, you know, that we... district does a very good job administratively about connecting staffing to dollars, and just lays it out nicely.
I think it's also important that we specifically break out the revenues that may be associated
right.
with a particular program, like we lost pre-K funding this year,
right.
things of that nature. So it shows the significant local support that we have to provide for really a state or federally mandated program.
Yep.
Such as special ed and
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
those types of expenditures. Significant contribution.
And our early childhood program, which was, you know, funded significantly in the past through grants and is now not funded at all. That's ours.
And then finally, we have our staffing summary, which just shows this year's numbers versus where we expect to be next year. And again, we're holding staffing very close as we enter those early discussions now about staffing for next year. This is where we our best estimates lie at the present. So I just did want to caution the committee. It's now about 7:05. We do have two more items that we need to go through. Are there any more questions that I can answer this evening regarding this very preliminary look at the multi-year budget?
I'll email my questions so we can move on.
That would be great if you can email your questions to us. I think if I were to summarize where I think some board members have asked about next steps in preparation for the levy, it would be to take that FY13 budget and try to be more specific in terms of what we would know at this point. I don't think we would do something more specific than a budget summary because, again, we tried to give you some of the detail of this. We can do that as much as is possible, but it's difficult at this point. Mm-hmm. But so if there are other questions or other things that you feel you need to see in order to be comfortable with the levy discussion, please let us know in the next week.
Mm-hmm. The next discussion item then this evening, I wanted to talk briefly about the Hadley parking lot project that we're proposing for next year. I apologize for not making last meeting, but I unfortunately have sort of had. So, I heard that there were some questions asked, and I'm here to try to answer those questions to respond to those questions. First of all, this evening, we call it Option 10. That's the existing layout of the Hadley site that it currently is today. So, then we wanted to...
Bob, may I interrupt you for just one moment? Mike and Loring?
Yes.
Do you feel... I know that we only requested that you participate with us during this portion, the first portion of the finance meeting. I'd like to let you go if that would be okay with you.
Sure, thanks.
Unless you
Nancy, you want me to stay on for that last item?
I don't think it's necessary. I think I have the data that you want, but you're certainly welcome to, Lori.
Do that first. Why don't you want to
do the substitute first?
Do you want to do the substitute first?
Yeah, then we can spend the remainder.
Okay, Lori, then you want to stick around?
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank
have a great
you.
Night.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, Lori. You're on.
Lori, do you want me to talk about it, and then you can answer questions?
Sure, sounds good.
Okay. We're requesting that we have the ability to increase our substitute aid pay. We are currently significantly below the DuPage average. Lori has done all of the research through her PACT group, all the personnel group, to ask what they pay their substitute aides. And we're talking about one-to-one aides who are required to be with a student on a daily basis and may do some very strenuous work with that student, may have to do toileting, may have to do changing, may have to do movement with students. And we're having a very difficult time getting people to fill those positions. Last year's rate of coverage, as you can see in the report, was about 65% or somewhere in that vicinity. I think currently, Lori, if I'm not wrong, we're not even close to that percentage of coverage right now.
I'm sorry, Anne, I lost you there for a second.
That where our coverage currently does not, right now for this school year, we've not been able to cover 60% of our sub-aides.
Correct. Our fill rate as of October 14th was 66%.
Okay. So that means there's a lot of students whose IEPs are not being fulfilled because we're pulling other staff to cover those one-on-one circumstances. So our psychologists, our social workers, our speech paths, our OTs, our anybody that we can bring into the classroom to help cover those situations are being used. So
is that a violation or?
It's a temporary solution.
So we can do that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we need to make those IEP minutes
right.
up if they're being lost.
Right,
right. That's my concern.
But that's
parents,
the danger.
Right. And parents could easily and should come mm-hmm. and make note of that because their child's not getting. If someone's being pulled from a child during their IEP minutes in order to help another child who needs it, obviously. Then we're robbing Peter to pay Paul, so we're mm-hmm. We're pulling from internal.
Yeah. Either that or the child who needs the one-to-one aid is not getting an aid during the day.
Right.
we had the survey for the salary. How does our absence or billing rate compare to the other districts?
Lori, could you hear that question?
Yes, I did. You know, at the end, we didn't ask that question. I just asked about rate of pay.
But I will say that this is the our rate of fill last year was startlingly low.
And I can say our rate of pay compared to other districts was way below par.
Are you getting comments, Lori, from substitute aides that you want to hire that they know that our rate of pay is significantly lower, a couple dollars lower than per hour?
Well, basically, we have a pretty robust substitute teacher pool, and some of them will take the sub-aid positions, but a lot of them won't because of the rate of pay.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is the potential, I think, with this change that we'll get some people who are fully certified to take some of these positions, too.
Mm-hmm. Is there a safety security issue along with this as well?
Absolutely, because we want to make sure that the kids who have the one-on-one aids get those one-on-one aids, and that when their assigned person is absent, that we can find someone to fill it. It's been, strenuous in the offices and for principals as they scramble in the morning when there's unfilled positions, which they don't have to do for our teacher bank of subs.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, it says here the total cost of the pay rate will be $5,400 for the year.
That's what we're projecting based on last year's absence rate.
Okay.
If we filled all of the positions for every day that someone was absent last year.
So this is not only an issue of wanting to keep social workers, speech pathologists, etc., doing the work that they're supposed to be doing. It's also an issue of having kids get the minutes and the time and also the correct support that they need during the day.
Correct.
Is that a fair description?
I think it would be good just to maybe see what the fill rate is for the other ones. So I think it sounds like there's an expectation that when we increase it, it will go up, but mm-hmm. it would be nice to hear what that is so that we set our expectations appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not that much higher, then maybe we need to see, is there something different we could do to make that higher?
Yeah, I'd be happy to ask for the information, but what I can tell you is a lot of our neighboring districts aren't able to access that data because they're not automated.
Hmm. They do everything.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do it. They have a sub-caller who makes the phone calls instead of using an automated system like we do. But, I can put the question out there.
So your point with that, Dan, is that maybe it doesn't shift it that much, so do we need to go to a little bit higher rate of pay to be even more?
Maybe it's not pay, maybe it's something different.
Mm-hmm. But you still want to work here? I doubt it. I mean, I think the children, I don't know.
But even if it doesn't increase to the full amount, the 5,400 is a percentage of that, so what are we over here.
Yeah. Well, that's my point about the amount of dollars. I mean, it could be up to $5,400 per year. I will.
With 100% use fill.
Yeah. I mean, my concern is that we don't have that we're taking from one student each day. We're taking away the learning that they need and the support they need to have in order to support this other child. That's not acceptable. We need to fulfill those IEP minutes, and we need to have people doing what they need to be doing.
And I think we're looking at what's a reasonable rate of pay that somewhere in the middle, we're still suggesting a rate that's a little bit lower than the average across DuPage.
And it's probably a good insurance policy, knowing what any kind of legal cost might be if something happens.
Well, that's my concern, right. Especially at Hadley
because
with the
understaffed and something.
Yeah,
else.
Especially with
exactly
at Hadley, that who are older and they need toileting, etc. It's just it's a very significant support. Very significant. So, valid question.
So the question that we would ask the board for direction on is if we can get a little bit more information for you, what would that be? And then if we can give you that information, would you be comfortable moving this to action at our next board meeting?
I think my question is not prove that you need that increase. I think you've already said that. My point is it going to help the problem?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying to
do. I'm not sure we could answer that question, but we can certainly, as Lori said, to the extent that we might be able to get data from other mm-hmm. places, we could certainly ask that. And I would, you know, certainly say to you that filling these positions is more challenging than filling a teacher sub mm-hmm. because of the nature of some of those requirements. Just in general.
Yeah. So these staff need to be certified in some way?
They do not. They need to have 30 hours, Lori?
Yes, CARPO letter of approval, which is 30 college hours.
And how many full-time staff people cover these positions?
When there's not, when someone's not out? Well, we'd have to go back and look at...
Yeah, there's like 38, 100 aides, 200, 300.
Oh, how special ed aides, Dan?
How many aides do we have total? Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. We have about, I think it's 37 special ed aides.
So on any given day, if say five...
Yeah, 37. Last year we had 41.
So five aren't there, then, you know, depending on the building, you're pulling somebody.
I'm just thinking, yeah, that's almost like 10 days per person. And I don't know if that you get a sub for vacation or sickness.
We don't have vacation days.
They don't get them.
So if you see someone's missing 10 days a year, then maybe... might be too stressful or whatnot. There's some sort of job share or 4-day a week or something, rotating schedule that may help.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dan, keep in mind also some of those may be FMLA leave because if someone's worked for us full time, they can get up to 60 days. You know, part of it might be unpaid.
Yeah.
But we do have conversations with our aides and all of our staff when they're absent rates.
Yeah. And we do an analysis, Lori, what do? About quarterly, we do an analysis of our absentee
mm-hmm.
rate.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I mean, I understand, I get what you're saying
yeah,
in terms of absentee rate may be something
be
the most
underneath.
Underlying
yeah.
problem
yeah,
we need to look at.
Issue. I think what Lori is asking us is let's get on this. It's already the end of October in this school year, and she wants to try something that seems to, you know, make some sense in order to stem this problem. So, Anne, you're asking us if we would move this to the first November meeting?
Correct.
I'm comfortable doing that. I think mm-hmm. we should. And Lori, if you can get some anecdotal, responses from some of the areas.
Right.
That'd be great.
And I think the fill rate will also vary based on the rate of pay.
Yeah.
So that's probably just another column that I'm guessing you want me to populate.
Well, to that end, can you then maybe put together a little graph or something that each district has what the district and their hourly rate, so maybe we can decide if we want to do a little bit more or less? Or
let's just go with the administrative rate.
Right? Yeah, I think she's totally recommending.
We've done that.
Yeah.
Okay,
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Lori.
I think maybe,
thank you very much.
I was going to say, I think maybe you're looking for if you could circle back with us at some point, Lori, and let us know did it work and
yeah,
if not.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
absolutely.
I would make a recommendation as to what we need to do.
Yeah.
I mean, we could share our spreadsheet with you, Sam, so you could see what the other districts are paying. If you'd like.
Right.
Woefully behind.
And I can send an inquiry out about the fill rate.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Lori.
Good night.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
Go eat dinner.
Okay, Seth, we wanted to move on to the final discussion item this evening. This is, again, a further update of the proposed plan for the Hadley parking lot. This is Hadley as it currently exists now. that what we call option 10. Then this is what you've already seen, which is option 5, which removes the above ground detention. The above ground detention is currently located approximately center of the smart board here, and put it underground under the new parking lot. And this will be sufficient to cover all of the reconfiguration and so forth, moving the above ground to the underground detention. Then I heard, then I'll show you a couple other alternatives, and that would be C1, which shows parking lot. You know, we had meetings with the village, well, with the city of Wheaton, the village of Glen Ellen, and they both asked, Bill Homer and the village of Glen Ellen both asked to at least explore the opportunity to probably or to possibly move bus drop off and pick up outside of the existing lot and put it along Glencoe here.
No, that's a long side. I thought you were right.
Because here's the portables and here's Glencoe.
Well, there it is, right there. I know, but you're 20. Right along the building?
Oh, yeah. They want the bus to come in and drop right at the door.
Yeah.
We don't want children to have to walk any more steps than necessary.
They got PE, that's
just that. So we have taken a look at this, and it does fit nicely. We would recommend that we at least consider this as an alternative, and what we would recommend is that this be bid as an alternative, rather than so we get some price estimates.
Did you see the village requested you do that?
They requested that we take a look at it because they would like to see all school buses. They don't like to see buses, cars, students, and so forth interacting, kids running across the parking lot. They asked us to take a look at it. In particular, Bill Homer asked us to take a look at what it would look like if we were to take the existing bus stop that's located along the front side of Hadley and put it out on Glencoe. Wheaton was in favor of it. We met with the village of Wheaton, the city of, we met with Glen Ellen and Wheaton. We met with the respective engineers, our representatives from FGM and EEA, and as well as those from each one of the municipalities. And they were in favor of at least taking a look at this alternative. They would recommend that we take a look at this alternative.
What they're asking to do, would it be like taking off the parkway and then like what they did at Ben Franklin where they had that special bus lane?
Mm-hmm.
So you would be taking off
all those trees.
Right.
That's exactly what they would do. What we would do
right.
is there's a, we would make the, let me just try to visualize what it would be. Essentially, you would remove all the grass that's along from the southernmost end to the northernmost end and make that all a parkway in there. Buses would pull off, drop all the kids off, or pick them up and move north on Glencoe out of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they would have to be, so there wouldn't be any more buses in the parking lot.
That's what our goal would be, to remove the buses.
Have either of you guys ever been to Hadley at pick up or drop off? Have you ever?
I have not.
Okay.
It's like a pinball machine.
The thing is that in the evening, the buses wait along Glencoe anyway.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Pick up lane traffic while they're waiting for half hour.
Well, so what would happen is they would park in this parkway and it would still allow two lanes of traffic up and down Glencoe. Where now it's either reduced to one lane or it stops.
Does any of it have to go, like, is there a public hearing on it with the people? I mean,
and we have sent out information to meet with the neighbors on these options for November 8th.
Okay.
7 p.m. at November.
And then
November
we would have to have
7 p.m. at Hadley. We've asked for a meeting of the neighbors just to come in. We're going to put out a display in terms of what we're going to do here, what we would like to see done. We would talk about realigning the parking lot, possible alternative with parking along Glencoe, above ground, below ground detention, just the different options that are out there, and listen to the neighbors' comments. And then also I've invited the city of Wheaton, been invited Bill Homer, Bob Minix and Stacey Holzberg from the village have all been asked to have just been notified that we're going to have a meeting anyway.
Well, and Bob, and I remember when we talked about, you know, when we were doing referendum and planning and such the last time, it was something that was you know, on a lot of people's minds. And if I remember correctly, this was one of the things that we had done, was taking those buses off the streets, putting them down just like this on Bunco. And that was, I remember the neighbors being very appreciative of that because it alleviates a great deal of traffic.
Mm-hmm. Well, what also happens is there's two cul-de-sacs that border on the west side of the on the west side of the Hadley property. Typically, our buses will go in and queue up in those areas and just wait 5, 10, 15 minutes. And periodically throughout the school year, I will get calls from concerned neighbors because the buses are running too long, they're creating too much noise, they're creating too much exhaust in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm.
Bob, since Bill Homer weighed in on, you know, asking the district to look at, you know, doing this from a safety standpoint, did you get any commentary from the police about taking out the detention and evening that out, creating better line of sight? Did they have any comment about this?
The comments regarding below ground versus above ground detention were a conversation as a result of meeting with Bill Homer, the village, at various times over the past couple of years, as well as the master facility plan that we had a couple of years ago.
Right.
That was one of the primary conversations that took place at the master facilities planning committees that we brought together. And that was one of the reasons that was one of the first things I looked at when it came time to redo that lot. It was to look at below ground versus above ground detention. Mm-hmm. A number of school districts in our area here that are sort of landlocked and don't have a lot of space that they can designate for that type of detention, meaning above ground, have all moved to below ground detention. So mm-hmm. we're taking a look at all the different options out there. I don't want to lock in.
I was just curious, since they had comment about this is a security or safety issue, what might have been the comment around that?
They believe there are significant sightline issues, both from the building as well as when you exit that Hadley parking lot and
right.
trying to get to the left, particularly to the left with oncoming traffic, and that
yep.
it's difficult to see.
Yep.
Which we would be eliminating anyway. I mean, that's, no matter what we do, we're eliminating that.
There's going to be some redesign work there. We're looking at alternatives to address that as best we can.
Father?
Yes?
I'm sorry. Looking at the parkway cuts, all the trees will need to be relocated?
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll relocate them within our fence line. We may be even able to use some of those same trees. I don't know that. Okay. But we would certainly make sure that the adequate plantings should we make this change.
Yeah.
Okay. Good question.
Can you combine some of these? Like, I mean, I'm looking at 5A that doesn't include that parking.
C1 is an alternate, no matter what. C1
yeah,
would
that's going to be bid as an alternate.
So that's something we're going, okay, sorry.
So we looked at...
we're not looking at all the other ones.
Here's C1 instead of busing.
All right, I didn't mean to open a can of
worms. I'm trying to get there. So in either case, the parking net, this is a look at parking with cars versus school buses.
Mm-hmm.
Again, along Glencoe, I think we get about 35 spaces versus the buses in there. And then we move to sort of a hybrid, which is what, with my understanding, I was asked to take a look at from the last session. And that would be combining the best of both worlds, in that we would still maintain above ground detention, but also look at redesigning a lot of that.
And that's option 11?
That would be option 11.
And 13.
Right? Oh my gosh. And 13, right. Now, this is a nice looking diagram. I think it adequately presents what we were hoping to do here. But I would like you to note that eastbound bus traffic, there is not enough large enough radius to turn around and get into the lot.
Hmm.
Off of Hawthorne, eastbound traffic trying to access that lot, you can't do because of the turning radius. So what we would need to do if we were to stay with this type of program or project, we would have to reroute bus traffic so all of it comes in on Hawthorne and heads westbound on Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm.
And you're approaching Glencoe to get to this entrance point.
It's a traffic nightmare.
How many buses are we talking about?
We have 18 buses, beginning and end of day, and we have a few special
late
ed buses there too. Special ed buses will be, their drop off is planned for right here in this area.
Mm-hmm. So 18 buses total?
18 buses every year.
18 buses without the special education buses.
And how many of those come in from the west cutting east side?
You know, to be honest with you, I can't answer that. I would say they're split.
I think most of them do, because there's very, you know, when I'm there, there's very few buses that come down from, I don't know, my directions bus.
Hawthorne,
because what they're doing is they're turning into the main lot.
That's correct.
To drop off in the main lot.
Right,
so they're coming in from that direction and not going up to turn, but in and cutting in front of all this. And then buses wait and queue up on the street until they move out, and then they move in. So it's
can you give clarification?
Well, have you ever been to the back? They park in the back lot and go in the back door.
No parking mavens for you? No parking mavens for you? Yep.
So the question that we don't have an exact answer is how many buses come from the west going east.
I assume the 50-foot radius is for a bus of a certain length, though.
All of our buses are 70-passenger buses that service have regular education buses. So those are the ones that require a minimum of 50-foot turning radius.
It's, I just want to have us look at the time. It's 7:30.
Just real quickly.
It's option 10.
Okay. All the buses coming here. That's good. They come from east or westbound off of Hawthorne. They turn in this area. And then they start queuing up here for drop-off in. Mm-hmm. So just depending upon how many buses, there's usually anywhere from 3 to 5. They all drop off. There's 18 buses that drop off within a 10-minute period. So as quickly as they come in, they're out of that. They're out of that park. They come in this way, up and around, and head back to the left and exit out on Glencoe.
Mm-hmm. So if you add the bus parking, alternate scene one, it's still drop off is still in front of the school.
No. If we did see one, then the bus parking would be
Glencoe. He said drop off.
Drop off would still be on the street. Everything would be on Glencoe.
So it all parking there doesn't make space. The kids would get out and walk into school from that
correct
spot.
That's C1. We would take the bus traffic out of the parking lot.
Right now they're parking. We would do all bus traffic. Everything would be on. But these C1 is an alternate, so it's not included in these drawings. So we'd like to bring this back for discussion, place it on the November 8th.
We have November
14th. November 14th meeting for discussion. And we basically feel we've narrowed it to those three possibilities, which would be 5A, C1 as an alternate, and 13.
Okay.
No, thank you.